For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to speak this morning about creativity and compassion as part of our practice, or we could say as the heart of our practice. So this Zazen, or Zen meditation we've just been doing, is a kind of creative expression. It's a kind of way of expressing something that we sometimes call Buddha nature, or expressing this deeper awareness which we connect with in Zazen. So in taking your posture, sitting upright, being present, we are each expressing Buddha as it appears on our own cushion or chair. So meditation, Zazen, and practice is not primarily about understanding something or trying to figure out something. It's not about some particular experience. It's about enacting or expressing. The deep awareness that we have an opportunity to connect with as we sit uprightly, relaxed, inhaling and exhaling, being present in this body and mind as it is, being open to not knowing who we are, what we're doing, how we're doing it, but just being here, being present, this body and mind, and returning to pay attention to that. So this is a kind of creative act, an act of expression. And this is not just about our sitting meditation, although for us that's our focal point for this, but also it's about what happens when we stand up and start doing walking meditation, when we chant, when we go out into our lives. So this creative mode of Zazen, excuse me, in many ways interacts with aspects of our daily life. So some of us here have explicitly what we call creative activities that we do. Painting or making music or writing or parenting, or as counselors or therapists helping people, or as teachers. All of these are creative activities, but actually in our daily life, through this awareness of Zazen, we can see all of our activities as creative, playful enactments of Buddha. How do we express Buddha in our various activities, in our relationships, in our presence, in our work context, in cooking, gardening, washing the dishes, taking out the trash? All of our daily activities can be creative activities. And the creative activities that each of you do in your daily life, there's a kind of mysterious but deep relationship between them and Zazen. So some of you have sat for the first time, a few of you for the first time this morning, which is wonderful for all of us. This isn't something that's necessarily obvious. It's not something we necessarily realize, but in various ways, there is this relationship between the activity of just sitting, taking some regular time out of your life 30 or 40 minutes, or even 15 or 20 minutes, several times a week or more, and just being present, facing the wall, facing ourselves, being willing to be in this body and mind, and to sit uprightly, and to see what that is, and to pay attention to that, gently, persistently. This informs all of the everyday creative activities that each of you do, and vice versa. So, as we sit, we start to see, we start to develop a capacity. This is a practice of patience, of tolerance, of awareness, of being, of learning to be able to tolerate, you know, sometimes some physical discomfort, more often just all the thoughts or feelings that are rumbling around, the many thoughts that come up that we don't control. So for those of you who sat the first time, you may realize that thoughts arise and we don't know where they come from, and we don't control our thoughts. And actually, being in control of things is not the point of this practice. How can we be open to playing with our experience, playing with our intention, playing with our activities? So this, sitting practice, if someone walked in and saw us all sitting here during meditation facing the wall, they would think of it as a very kind of stern or stoic kind of activity. But I encourage you to find the play and the playfulness in your sitting and in your life. Part of how this works is that we start to have a tolerance, a wider capacity to see things in new ways, to try new things, to make mistakes, hopefully not too harmful mistakes, but to not to let go of our sense of who we are and how the world is and how we should do things and how we can control things. So we have specific forms for how to move around the meditation hall. We have specific forms for bowing and for doing service and for chanting and so forth. All of these, and also a form for doing this meditation practice. These are all ways to see, structures for seeing our deeper freedom, our deeper possibility for being in new ways. And one aspect of this that's most fundamental, as you develop a regular sitting practice, as this starts to become part of the rhythm of your life. For some people, what happens more if you come and do a longer sitting. So we offer every month either an all-day sitting or sometimes a half-day sitting, or next month 3 days to sit for a little longer when you're ready for that. Provide more opportunity for this, but even just sitting for one period and finding a regular rhythm of doing that through your week, we start to, without necessarily knowing it or seeing it or realizing it, we start to access this deep source of creative energy. Being willing to be present and upright. There is this, Zen mostly talks about it in terms of metaphors, this wellspring or this spaciousness or this stream of creative awareness, creative energy. So this isn't something you should try and get a hold of or try and figure out. This isn't something you have to do anything about, actually. So again, our practice is not about reaching some new state of mind or higher state of being or anything like that. Our practice is about realizing something very deep that is already here for each of you in your body and mind, in your own way. How Buddha looks is different on each cushion and chair. How you express that in your uprightness, in your breathing, is different. And yet, there is this deeper energy. Some of you may recognize when I talk about it, and some not. It doesn't matter. It's there. It's not, again, not something abstract. It's not some philosophy or idea or some theory. It's much more tactile than that. So people who paint or make music or write or, you know, parent or, you know, there are visible products, or maybe for playing music there's a temporary, transient, audible product of your creativity. For Zen students, what we create is much more ephemeral. We create this body of Buddha. So it's not something that we don't really have a visible product, but as you start to sit regularly, as you become familiar with this deeper space, whether you think about it or know it or not, your awareness and your body itself becomes more permeable, more accessible to this creative play. And part of how this works, so I want to get to the compassion part of this, part of how this works is that we start to have a sense of our connectedness. So this is a basic Buddhist teaching, that everything is interconnected, that everything that happens dependent on mutual causation, this dependent arising of all things. In some ways, the whole universe is created with this inhale and this exhale. Your whole world, including everybody you've ever known, or everybody who's ever known you, or all the activities you've ever done, is present here on this inhale and exhale. And we start to get a sense of that, that we are deeply connected with each other and with many beings, and that things that happen in different parts of the world, or things that have happened in different parts of your life, in the past or in the future, affect and interact with this next breath, this last breath, and everything we do. So this deep interconnectedness is part of this creative energy, a way of seeing this creative energy, a way of seeing how we are, how our Zazen is related to everything that we do, all of our creative activities in our life. And again, when I talk about creative activities, I'm seeing this very widely. You know, how you enjoy, you know, walking down the street, or riding a bicycle, or seeing, you know, the sights on your block. We can have that openness and freshness about our life. We can inform our life with this creative energy. From this connectedness comes what we sometimes call in Buddhism compassion. Because this deeper creative awareness, well, it's about ourselves, but it's also about so-called others. You know, our usual way of thinking, our usual way of seeing the world, our usual syntax and language for thinking is about subject and object. And we fall into thinking of ourselves as subjects, verbing objects out there to get what we want, or protecting ourselves from being verbed by subjects out there, or whatever. But there is this connectedness, and we see that we are related to those we may think of as others. We see that we are connected. So the word compassion means passion together with. Again, this looks like a very somber, stoic, stern kind of practice, just sitting upright, eyes open, facing the wall. But really, you won't be able to persist in this unless you feel some passion for life, some caring about what is the quality of this life? How am I affecting the other people around me? How are they affecting me? How am I working together with all the circumstances and situations of this life? Self and others are connected. So, all of you, those of you who came for the first time this morning and those of you who have been here before, all of us came to this practice, maybe different combinations of reasons, maybe out of some sense of wanting to find some greater calm in our life, wanting stress reduction, all of that is available in meditation, or wanting to know how to take care of this life, how to be this person, or some sense of loss. Many people find practice after some loss, some loved one, or some loss of some relationship, or some situation, some job. The first noble truth is that there is sadness and suffering as part of the nature of things. Compassion is about our caring about that. And because you are here this morning, I know you all care about your life and the world. So we are connected together, and the bodhisattva of compassion, the enlightening being of compassion in Buddhism and in Zen is named Kanon or Kanzeon. There's an image of him on either side wall, and actually Tara, the female version, or one female expression of Kanon, is right by the door in front. The name Kanon means to hear, or Kanzeon, to hear the suffering of the world, to hear the sounds of the world. So compassion is first and foremost in Buddhism about listening, about being open, not just to others, but also to ourselves. So we need to find a way to sit upright and present and be kind to ourselves. So if you need to change your position in the middle of a period, that's okay. But also, can you be kind to yourself and allow yourself to just sit still without moving? To be present in this body as it is. And in various ways in our life, we need to be kind to ourselves, forgive ourselves for being human beings, and be kind to others to see. I've been talking recently about Buddha nature, this quality of awareness in all people, in all beings, in all things. How do we see that in others? How do we respect others and respect ourselves? So this deep creative energy is a kind of respect, a kind of honoring of our life and of our activities and of the situation of just sitting upright as Buddha. Now, I wanted to share a little bit of teaching about compassion. So this is from a week before last. I went to a symposium on Western socially engaged Buddhism in Western Massachusetts at the Zen Peacemakers Order. Many impressive people. One of the panels, though, was about compassionate care, and specifically care for the dying. And on this panel were a number of people who have done this quite a lot themselves, but also train others to do this, including an old friend of mine, Joan Halifax, who leads the Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe. And she had some interesting things to say about compassion, so I want to try and share this. First of all, she talked about how some people, particularly people who are in helping professions or practices, So she was thinking about it in terms of people who take care of the dying. But, you know, for several of you in the room are therapists, and others of you have are teachers or do helping work in some way. And one of the things that happens in such, for people who do that a lot, is they have this sense of what's sometimes called compassion fatigue. So Nancy's smiling, as she's a therapist, and they have some sense of that, and maybe all of us do. We get tired of, you know, taking care of other people, or being kind, or listening to others. We may feel like, I don't want to do that anymore. Well, you also have to listen to yourself. But anyway, Joan said this interesting thing, first of all, that really there's no such thing as compassion fatigue. That's a misnomer. That happens when we are not accessing universal compassion. When we have some limited idea of compassion, when we are attached to some particular outcome, then, you know, we might feel this compassion fatigue. But this universal compassion, which is what Kanzaion and Buddhist compassion is really about, is wider than that, deeper than that. Is about, I can't put it in words exactly, because to put it in words would be limited. But it's this sense, and coming back to this creative, tactile sense of expressing, of an expression that we connect with in Zazen, it's this total sense of wholeness, of it's okay, of the whole universe being right here, of you, just as you are. And each of you, even those of you who just sat one period now, we all have a sense also of our own limitations and our own sometimes greed and grasping or anger and frustration or confusion. This is what compassion is about, that we allow ourselves to be the person you are, not limited by, you know, your name and personal history and the social security number, but actually what's going on now, as you sit, breathing, this body and mind. So this universal compassion goes beyond, you know, our idea of what, how we should be compassionate and what we should be and how we should care for things and how we listen. And Joan broke it down into, she had six aspects of, you know, how she sees compassion. She's obviously thought about it a lot. So I'll just share this with you, and as a way of talking about the texture of compassion, the components of compassion. So the first one, she said, is empathy, emotional attunement, that we can be empathetic and experience others' suffering, that we can feel something about how others feel. So this, of course, is, you know, primary to the practice of listening and to the practice of, well, anyone who's being helpful. But she said that actually empathy can be used destructively. Empathy in and of itself doesn't mean that we're going to respond in a caring, kind way. We might understand somebody's suffering and then do something, you know, cruel to them based on that. So empathy is not, by itself, is not enough. So what she has to say is interesting. So empathy is the first one, though. Then concern, just to be concerned. Again, about both self and others, to actually, you know, what's going on, to have some concern, to pay some attention. The third one, she called positive regard. I think this relates to what I was talking about in terms of respect and respectfulness. So positive regard includes for ourselves. So some Zen students get upset at themselves because we see more fully our own limitations and our own greediness. We have to have positive regard, respect for ourselves and for others, and even for people we maybe have a problem with sometimes. This, we could see this related to the practice I've talked about seeing Buddha nature in all beings. It's positive regard. The next one fourth of her six, she called insight. And it's a funny word for it, because what she was talking about is to see self and other, to look and see differences, to see how I am different from others, to see the particular quality of self and other, and to see what we are up to in our relationships with others, and to see what and to see how others are with us. Actually, so I would call this more discernment or even discrimination, but to actually pay attention to that. The fifth one, and this is very, very important, is the desire to transform others' suffering. And I would say this includes to transform our own suffering. So this practice of Zazen, this practice of awareness, of just sitting, we talk about, in, particularly in Suki Roshi lineage, about non-gaining attitude, not to be attached to some particular goal. And yet there is this, there is a transformative function to this. And we don't always see how that works. And it happens over time. Sometimes we have some sudden experience and let go of something. That happens too. It can happen. But the point is sustaining it. And part of that is what she's calling this fifth aspect of compassion, the desire to transform suffering. So we actually need to be empathetic. We need to be concerned. We need to have a positive regard. We need to see how things are working. And then we have to really care about transforming this quality of suffering and difficulty in the world and in ourselves. And then the last one I've already spoken of is to not be attached to some particular outcome. So how do we give ourselves to ourselves and to all beings, and with caring, with compassion, without having some idea of what some particular outcome should be? So these are, you know, so this is interesting to consider, you know, in terms of compassion and caring and beneficial action in the world, these aspects of compassion. This, first of all, just this empathy or emotional attunement, this concern, this positive regard or respect, this seeing into how we are related to others, this desire to transform, and then not being attached to some particular outcome. All of these are aspects of what Joan calls universal compassion, a deeper, wider compassion, not trying to manipulate things to get what we think needs to happen in some particular situation. So I want to bring this back to the earlier discussion about creativity. I would say that to really express and be and enact this kind of compassion requires a kind of creativity, a kind of openness to seeing things in a new way, a kind of playfulness, a kind of willingness to look at the situation, to listen to our own or other suffering, or both, to see how can we be helpful, to ask that question, to care about that, to be concerned, to be playful about that. So in our lives, so we can do this in our, this creative energy that we access in our meditation practice and in our meditative awareness does inform all of our everyday creative and compassionate activities and awarenesses. And we can kind of turn towards this. So in your own life, to see, and I'll be talking more about this tomorrow evening, but how to see how you can try to be creative about how to express kindness, how to care for others, how to care for yourself, to be kind to yourself too. This is absolutely necessary to really be compassionate, to not feel overwhelmed and fatigued by being helping others all the time. Universal compassion means that we have some sense of balance and wholeness, and it's not that there's some particular thing that we have to do right now. To give ourselves the space to just be present and upright, to express Buddha in all kinds of ways that Shakyamuni Buddha never would have dreamed of. So Buddha is alive in the world, in us, each of us, in our way of meeting the world, in our way of bringing our wholeness to our life, in our openness to caring, in our openness to this creative play. So we actually have some time now for discussion, questions, responses, and for people who are new here this morning, also any basic questions about meditation, please feel free. So questions, comments, responses, anyone? Good.
I was very sleepy this morning and had a real hard time staying awake. Any suggestions?
Good. Enjoy that. So, this happens. This is one of the reasons why we say to sit with your eyes open. It's not the only reason. We sit with our ears open, too. But the point of this practice is not to be to reach some special experience or state of mind or state of being. It's to be with what is. So compassion means to, okay, I'm sleepy and groggy this morning. How is that? That's actually, I think, a very rich time to sit. So hopefully you'll have times when you're feeling more awake also, more energetic. But there's a kind of energy that happens in sleepiness. So you can also be present and upright and aware in the middle of sleepiness. It may be it's most difficult because you're trying to be something other than sleepy, and if you started snoring, someone next to you might poke you. But and you have permission to if somebody's next to you is snoring, to gently just let them know that they're doing that if they're sleeping. For myself, I it took me many years of sitting before I could fall asleep in zazen, but. Yeah, be with this situation as it is. And sometimes you might be sleepy, sometimes you might be agitated, concerned about something going on in your life that week. Or you might be, anyway, there's a continuum of awareness that includes dream and sleep. To be present and upright in the middle of that. So, good. Again, this is being kind to yourself means being able to just be present and upright, even if you're feeling sleepy. Other comments or questions or responses, please feel free. Alex?
One thought I had as I was listening was I found myself constantly coming back to this idea is it's very easy in an atmosphere like this, we have a lot of reminders of Buddha nature, to cultivate that here and to feel that presence. But I find it difficult when I get out into other aspects of my life, such as my job, where there are no touchstones for Buddha nature, and my cube or other areas around there, to tap into the presence all the time. So I find that's for me a struggle to maintain some idea of Buddha nature environments where there's just no reminders of that idea.
Good. Thank you. That's a wonderful, important question for all of us. So we're not practicing in a residential community or a monastery. We're in, out on the street in the city. All of us have, various kinds of active lives in the world. So yeah, this is the question, practically for us. And one of the basic aspects of our practice is to remember Buddha, to remind ourselves of Buddha, to bring back this awareness. into our everyday activities as you're working in your everyday context. So there's a branch of Buddhism, not Zen, that does what's called Nembutsu practice, which is chanting the name of Buddha as a reminder. Literally, it means to remember Buddha. As Zen students, we can do that as well. So, based on your connection from sitting of with breathing, to just stop in the middle of your day and take a breath and really enjoy your inhale and your exhale. It doesn't take that long. It won't take you away from the work you have to do very long, but just to stop and do that. And there are various tricks for this. So you say you work in a cubicle or a desk in an office. You know, you could have something on your desk to remind you. It doesn't have to be a Buddha or a Bodhisattva image. It could be, I don't know, some natural, you know, a pine cone or a rock you like particularly. Or it doesn't have to be, this isn't about Buddhism. This is about bringing your life to life. So yeah, have something to remind you. And there are various other particular mindfulness practices that I've mentioned before. One is whenever the phone rings, do you have a phone on your desk?
Yes.
Yeah, so when the phone rings, sometimes we can get in the habit of just reaching for the phone and picking it up on the first ring. I used to work at Parallax Press that published Thich Nhat Hanh's books, and they had this practice there, and I graded on me a little bit, because you have to, whenever the phone rings, everybody stops everything. You're in the middle of typing a word, and you stop in the middle of the word, and wait to the fourth ring, and then take that time to breathe. But you can do a more moderate version of that. You know, if the person who's calling you really wants to talk to you, they'll still be there on the third ring. So the first ring and the second ring, you can, you know, take a breath or two, and then pick it up. Just as so again, this is about finding ways to remind Buddha in the middle of your day. Another one. One of my teachers talked about is whenever you walk through a doorway, I'm entering a new space. So you have doors somewhere in your office. So every time you're passing through a doorway, if you forget and you pick up the phone right away, or you walk through the doorway and you don't think about it, that's okay. Don't, you know, be compassionate to yourself and to the doorway. But sometimes you might remember, oh yeah, okay. So there's a kind of craft or knack that we get of reminding ourselves of this kind of space of sitting. So thank you for that question. Other questions, practical or otherwise, any responses, please feel free. Yes, Tom.
You know, when you're meditating, you maybe focus on reading, but then your mind could move away. How long should you move away before it comes back to breathing?
When you realize that you're off on some train of thought, it doesn't matter if it's a couple minutes or 20 minutes. So there's not some rule about these things. It's about being alive. So, oh, yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, this thing I have to do tomorrow. Oh, okay. And just return to awareness. And it's not that it's bad to have those thoughts. Thoughts naturally come and go. But just when you realize, oh, yeah, I'm thinking about whatever, gently then return to uprightness, inhale, exhale. So you don't have to, so trying to get rid of your thoughts or trying to manipulate your thoughts is just more thinking. Just let it go. And more thoughts will likely come again shortly. Or sometimes there's a space between them, and that's okay too. Good, practical questions. Any other comments, responses about practice? Yes, Jeremy.
You don't mind if I make a comment on what I said before about how you...
No, please.
...to be generous or to relate to other people better and be more generous. Because I actually was kind of... I was trying to pose that question to Mr. Reeves the other day. Quite better terms than that. But and he gave the response of Buddha nature is a good way to respond to other people. I think I found that if you allow yourself to see your own Buddha nature, and that the line separating you from what you think is yourself and Buddha nature is so microscopically small.
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be very helpful in relating to other people.
Yeah, so this Buddha nature, it's not something that we can have or not have or get, but it's just that there is this underlying possibility of awareness and respectfulness. And so to respect others, respect yourself, to see this quality of awareness in our life. Yeah, good. Thank you. Dawn.
You both, well, recently, I've said, I'm not going to say it quite right, it took me a minute when I used it the other night. When we're sitting, notice, just are, can we be happy with just this, or be content with just how we're feeling, how we're sitting just now? Like,
mm-hmm.
And so that's helped me a lot with what Joan says with number six, kind of the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Just in some of my outcomes with sitting. So kind of slowly working on being content with outcomes, because I think I get so hung up in that, you know, and expecting, you know, my expectations. I think a lot of people do that personally, for sure, I do, and that causes so much pain and suffering, you know, and so that's been a really helpful practice with you saying that, to just be able to sit with that and like, can I be content with how I'm really feeling right now? And
mm-hmm.
So just so that kind of connected with me with numbers for 6 months you talked about, so thank you.
Yeah. I, you know, and I'm feeling this more and more, that the biggest obstacle to awareness and to Zen practice for Americans particularly is that we tend to have some, it's very hard to get rid of our idea of how things should be, or having some ideal of enlightenment or meditation or Buddha or whatever. Our minds are such that we create these ideas. It's very subtle. It's very pernicious that my zazen shouldn't be sleeping, you know, or should be some particular way. We do have all kinds of ideas about that, or how I should be as a person. You know, this is very deep and pervasive, and it's a big obstacle. Not that you should now have the idea to destroy all ideas, but just to notice that when you have some ideal of how things should be, that that's not it. But actually, we're alive. So this is all about just finding the way for you to be alive in your life, to bring life to your life. Thank you. Yes, Steve.
I've done meditation off and on, or off and on. Part of it is, it's very difficult at times. It's very difficult to just sit with what comes up. And so it does feel like a somber, challenging practice at times, often. And yet, I just watched a DVD of the Dalai Lama, and you know, he talks about joy.
Yes, good.
You know, there's a lot of seemingly joy that he expresses. When do you get to that? Is that the byproduct of long-term practice?
So you didn't notice your joy in this last period of meditation?
No. I was with my new colleague, I was very sleepy, and you know, bouncing back and forth between, I know there's antidotes to when you feel sleepy, using some of those.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you can do is, if you're sleepy, maybe I should mention this as a practical thing. You know, we usually say to look about 45 degree angle down, but you can raise your gaze a little bit to help raise your energy if you're feeling sleepy. So yeah, there are all these techniques, but can you enjoy just being sleepy? Can you enjoy, please enjoy this situation? So yes, this practice is about joyfulness. And everything I've been talking about is about joyfulness. Creativity is joyful. compassion is joyful. How do we enjoy our breath? How do we enjoy the challenges of, you know, sitting upright for 30 minutes or whatever? So again, you have some idea of joyfulness.
If I may respond, just
please.
There's a joy, there's all kinds of different joys, of course, but there's a naturally bubbling, surfacing joy.
Yeah.
That I kind of wonder if that happens. And yet, when I just mentioned this, there was kind of a kind of recognition that, yes, this is a challenge, is how I interpret that.
Yeah.
And that it is work. You know, and that naturally bubbling doesn't, and it's not just here, I've been in other places too.
Sure.
You know, that's elusive sometimes.
Yes. So sad. It's work, and that means it's also play. So this is what I've been talking about today. This source of creative energy, it's joyful. It may also, it doesn't exclude the sadness. It doesn't exclude anything. But just to be able to sit and be present and upright with the difficulties and concerns and questions and sadnesses of your life, there's a kind of dignity, there's a kind of wholeness, there's a kind of joy that is available. And again, it's not your idea of joy. But enjoy the situation of being present, just sitting. So this is a yogic practice, as I was saying earlier during the meditation instruction. We actually, you know, sit upright. All of the forms we do here, our bows, our prostrations, are yogic practices. They're to find in our body, in our tactile sense, as opposed to our ideas, some awareness or space. So one practice I'd like to encourage is something that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about, that while you're sitting, please smile a little. It can be a soft smile. Doesn't mean you should try and, you know, have some idea of smiling or some idea of getting rid of all suffering. Smile in the middle of whatever's going on. So if you look at Buddha images, maybe not Bodhidharma because he's very stern, but there's a subtle smile. And just to smile a little bit as you're sitting, to give yourself that space to enjoy the work and play of being present in the middle of concerns, in the middle of uncertainty, in the middle of, you know, all the incredible suffering of our world, in the middle of sleepiness, frustration. Right in the middle of frustration, you can enjoy that. It's possible. You can say, oh yeah, here I am. I'm all concerned about, or anxious about this or that, or I'm frustrated with so-and-so, or whatever. Can you just be there and enjoy that? So I know this is challenging, but play at it. Kathy?
I just wanted to respond briefly in that I definitely think from my own experience and from lots of people's experience that there's also, you go through a lot of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to see the joy sometimes, because as you sit, some things come to the surface that are painful. That you become more acutely aware of, whether it's being angry at somebody in your life, or seeing yourself more honestly, or missing something, or it can be a variety of things. And so I think that does get easier over time, but there definitely is a sitting through. And Tai, and I remember once when we were doing Sashin, you said that you sat at Sashin once where somebody ran screaming from the temple at the end of the day, so that there are times when it's like overwhelming.
It happens, yes.
But there's also the intense other feelings as well that come as you sit, you know, which are positive.
And yes, absolutely. Thank you for saying that. And just being able to sit and be present and upright, even in the middle of those difficulties, there's a kind of deep satisfaction that we can start to feel. That even if I'm sleepy or feeling these crummy parts of myself or whatever, still I can be present and upright. And there's a dignity to that. And yeah, it does. So doing this practice regularly over time does help to support that. Nancy?
I am maybe also hung up on the word enjoy as well, because I think for me, when I think of enjoying something, I think of, you know, maybe a synonym of it being to like it. And I wonder if that's maybe not completely necessary when you're talking about enjoying something. And so I wonder if it would it be okay to use the word like appreciate or embody, and, you know, appreciate meaning also sort of to observe the value of something.
Sure, all of that's there. And so our idea of enjoy is not enjoy.
That's, yeah.
Enjoy means to bring joy to also.
Ah.
To empower, in path, and to bring, and joy, you know, so that, you know, joy might be a good koan for many of you. What is joy? Just, you know, not based on your idea of liking something. You might really dislike something, but really enjoy it. I remember a story about a Zen student who went to a movie, and somebody asked him afterwards, how was the movie? And he said, oh, I really enjoyed it. He said, oh, it was a good movie? No, it was a terrible movie, but I really enjoyed myself in it. So how can you enjoy this difficulty? So I'm enjoying the tension of it's kind of time to stop, but I don't want to.